entirely in whisper, and every story is a true story. My name is Kit, and I am your host. This is episode number 9. Now, if you are a new listener, thank you for joining me. It makes me feel so warm and fuzzy simply to know that every new episode brings new listeners. I hope that you will continue to listen to all of my future episodes. And if you are a returning listener, hello again. All of my gorgeous wild cats and pretty pussy cats. It always makes me happy that you are here with me. And I have some very exciting news to share. You have given this podcast over 5,600 downloads in the very short period of time that this podcast has existed. Less than 5 months. Meow. I wish I could give every one of you a great big warm hug. However, since I obviously can't do that, I will just say thank you. Thank you. All of you. But especially all of my returning listeners. Seriously, thanks. Next, please pay attention to what I am about to say. I need every listener to understand that sometimes whisper talk can be very hypnotic. And so, if you're behind the wheel of a moving vehicle, please, please, do not listen to this podcast. I really do not want you to drift into a trance and end up in some horrible crash. Because then, well, you won't be able to hear my next episode. Thank you for listening to my TED Talk. Now, one last thing. I'm going to give a short warning to everyone in regard to the subject matter of the featured story. I will be telling the story of a murder that was committed by two teenage girls in the year 2003. The victim of the murder was their mother. However, the specific facts will be kept to the absolute minimum needed to accurately tell the story. But even so, if you think that hearing about these things could possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then this episode might not be something you should listen to. So, you can't say I didn't warn you. Also, I do not recommend this episode for children. However, if any little sponges are listening nearby, well, it might be a good idea to turn this podcast off until later. tend to have stories that are longer. My target is to make the featured stories to be at least double the length of the ones that we have told on our most recent episodes. Now, on this episode, our featured story is a little less than that goal, because, unfortunately, the available information is limited, mainly because the individuals at the center of the story were juveniles at the time of the crime, and for that reason, many of the details have been shielded from the eyes of the public for the protection of everyone involved, especially the family members of the victim. However, when I started working on this story, I did not know or realize that fact. But by the time I finished, I had invested so many hours in research, writing, and recording that it would have been a complete waste of my very slender resources to scrap the episode merely because it was not as long as I had originally hoped for it to be. Listeners, I'd rather give you a good story than one that is stuffed with windy filler and empty words just to make it long. And now, with that having been said, I will begin our featured story. Our story begins in the year 2003 in a suburb of Toronto, Ontario, in Canada, at the home of Linda Anderson, age 43, and her two daughters, Sandra, age 16, and Elizabeth, also known as Beth, who was age 15. Linda raised her children as a single parent because their father had walked out on the family. This soon resulted in Linda becoming an alcoholic and severely depressed. Nevertheless, she managed to hold down two jobs. But unfortunately, a large part of every paycheck ended up being spent on booze, as well as relationships with abusive men who were usually alcoholics like herself. According to police reports, Sandra and Beth had become increasingly irritated with their mother for, quote, wasting money on alcohol, unquote, as well as her drunken boyfriends. And this was money that they needed just to live. Money that was needed to buy food or to pay for electricity or other bills was thrown away on beer, wine, and whiskey. And because of this ugly financial situation, the girls never had the quote unquote better things that their friends had, like designer clothes, a swimming pool, and fancy houses. Instead, they often ended up needing to get their clothes at thrift stores, church giveaways, or occasional gifts from relatives, and getting their groceries from charities or free food pantries for the poor. This led to a great deal of resentment by the two girls. And slowly but surely, the sisters ultimately came to the conclusion that the only way that they could permanently solve their problems with their mother was to simply kill their mother. And then the two of them could practically live in splendor from the money that they would get from their mother's life insurance policy. these girls were not dummies. In fact, they were quite the opposite. For example, a guidance counselor at their school remarked in an interview that they were the smartest kids he had ever known in 30 years of teaching. In addition, both of these girls were strikingly pretty, and possibly for that reason, they had quickly become part of the elite inner circle of quote-unquote the popular kids at school. So, because they were part of that circle, the sisters knew the things that their friends had, and also that they certainly did not have any of those things, or the money to get them. Perhaps at this moment, it might be worth mentioning that C.S. Lewis, the author of the Narnia stories and the Screwtape Letters, once said that envy is one of the easiest ways for the devil to get you into his clutches. Now, that might be true, but these girls weren't too greedy or selfish. They promised their friends that once they had the insurance money in their hands, that they would take them all on a trip to Europe. And then, after they came back, they would buy a mansion with a greenhouse marijuana farm in the backyard. And those friends would be welcome to come over anytime, day or night. Wow, those were some pretty grandiose plans for only $68,000 in life insurance. However, even so, that tells you a lot about them. These two sisters both had charisma, charm, intelligence, good looks, and bubbly personalities. They seemed to be able to use these traits to talk their friends into practically anything, including looking the other way as Sandra and Beth carried out their plot to murder their mother. Anyway, let's get back to our story. Now, as I said, they began to search on the internet for ways to kill their mother. They spent a lot of time researching this topic. The two girls studied probably 10 times as hard as they ever had studied for any exam at school. Literally, hours and hours. So, according to the police investigation, the result of all this research was that the sisters decided to drown Linda Anderson because they believed it would be, quote, fast and spectacular, unquote. The police would later find on the search history of the computer that the sisters had looked at hundreds of web pages that had information about death through drowning, including the specific amount of time that an adult would need to be kept underwater in order for death to occur. And in case you are wondering, that amount of time is typically 4 minutes. So, after deciding upon a specific plan for how to successfully commit the murder, Sandra and Beth informed 3 of their friends, who all thought it was a great plan and encouraged several codeine pills into the alcohol to slow down their mother's heartbeat, which would make it even harder for their mother to resist. Sandra and Elizabeth then waited for the combination of alcohol and drugs to take full effect. While waiting, the sisters chatted with their friends online. One of these friends ended their conversation by saying, "Well, goodbye. Wear gloves." Gosh, listeners, these girls had some really hilarious friends, didn't they? LOL. Anyway, getting back to our story. The sisters walked their mother to the bathroom. They had a great deal of trouble getting her into the tub. It was a major struggle. Linda was slipping and falling and experiencing a great deal of clumsiness because of the large quantity of vodka she had consumed together with the codeine pills. But once they managed to get her in, Sandra and Beth both put latex gloves on and began to give their mother a relaxing massage. After a few minutes, Sandra told her mother to turn over and lay on her stomach, and she would wash her back. As soon as Linda turned her body, Sandra instantly pulled her mother's head down into the water and did not let go. She then held Linda's head under the water for 4 minutes. Sandra released her mother's head, and when Linda did not raise herself out of the water, it was then self-evident that she was dead. And now, after having successfully murdered their mother, Sandra and Beth went out with their friends to a nearby restaurant where they celebrated their achievement. The sisters waited a few hours until nighttime and then made a phone call to 911, in which their voices were frantic, screaming, and in a total panic. They informed the 911 operator that they had just walked into the bathroom and found their mother laying in the bathtub and that she wasn't breathing. The 911 operator told the girls to take their mother out of the bathtub and gave clear instructions on how to start CPR. However, the sisters did not follow the instructions of the 911 operator. At first, crying in hysterical, they said they were afraid to touch her. But after the operator practically pleaded with them to begin CPR, they told the operator that they could not resuscitate her. When the police arrived, Sandra and Elizabeth Anderson were upset and freaking out, like any typical teenager would be under normal circumstances of discovering that their mother had died in a horrible accident. So the police fully believed their story. The death was ruled accidental. The girls were not suspected of any crime. And that's the way it was, and the way it probably would have stayed. Except for one little thing that changed everything. About a year after the murder, the sisters held a party. Sandra quickly got drunk and began flirting with a guy she happened to meet. He was vaguely aware that her mother so he said that he was sorry that she had died in such a tragic accident. And then, for some weird, unknown reason, she joked that the death might not have been an accident. This strange comment made him feel suspicious and uneasy. So the next day, he called the police and told them everything that Sandra had said to him. And following this, a car was provided to the boy, rigged for audio and video by the police. Soon thereafter, he managed to find a way to get both girls in the car. And each of them were recorded describing how they had committed their mother's murder. Sandra and Beth were subsequently arrested, put on trial, and sentenced to 10 years in prison for first-degree murder, which was the maximum sentence for a juvenile of their age under Canadian law. The sisters were separated and were forbidden to communicate with each other while in jail. Sandra was released to a halfway house in 2009, while her younger sister, Beth, was released a year later. The girl's father unsuccessfully attempted to have Beth released earlier so she could complete her sentence under house arrest in their hometown. Now, here is something that I've delayed saying in order to avoid distraction from the chain of events. The real names of the people in this story are not Linda, Sandra, or Elizabeth Anderson. Since both Sandra and Beth were under the age of 18 at the time of the murder, their identities were and continue to be protected under Canadian law. In fact, their identities will forever be a secret. Sandra is pursuing a career in law. After her release, she was accepted to the University of Waterloo with a $2,000 scholarship. Beth traveled to Ottawa with the intention of going to college and seeking a career in engineering. There does not seem to be any additional information regarding either of the sisters. Or, I should say, nothing online. The story of the murder of Linda Anderson was featured on the television series Deadly Women in 2010 and was the subject of the book The Glass Project by Bob Mitchell. Additionally, a true crime drama film based on the murder called Perfect Sisters was released in 2014. And unfortunately, due to the fact that no other details seem to exist, we are now at the end of our story. So, listeners, you heard the story. And obviously, there is no mystery to solve. Thus, needless to say, I won't be asking you for your ideas about that. What a terrible death for Linda Anderson. Drowning is one of the most frightening, painful, awful ways for a human being to die. And under the laws of Canada, prison today, and probably for many more years in the future. There have been numerous cases here in the U.S. where teens have committed murder and have been sentenced to life in prison, including sometimes without any possibility of release, no matter what the circumstances. However, these long sentences for teens are currently under challenge in courts across the country on the grounds that it is unconstitutionally cruel punishment. Listeners, do you have any thoughts? If you do, you can email them to whispertruestories@gmail.com. But take care to type that as all one word. There are no hyphens, dashes, or underscores. On a future episode, I will share the thoughts and comments that have been sent regarding the stories that have been featured on the podcast so far. If you don't want your name used, or if you would like me to use an alias for you, just let me know. And listeners, if you have any suggestions for possible cases or topics, please feel free to email them to me. I really want to hear any ideas that you may have. Also, in addition to email, you can follow and comment on Twitter at the handle @WhisperedDrew. Once again, one word, @WhisperedDrew. Finally, if you like the podcast, including the concept of the podcast, you can help out the show by going to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully, there will be a new episode every 2 weeks. I am trying. I swear. I really am. Maybe I need to get a priest to bless my recording equipment or something. Finally, listeners, please stay tuned after the episode to hear about a couple of podcasts that you might want to try. So, with all of that having been said, this episode has now reached the end. My name is Kit, and I will leave you now with this thought. Every truly clever crime is founded, ultimately, on some quite simple fact, and it is always some fact that is not itself mysterious. The mystification only comes in covering it up and trying to lead others away from it. Goodbye, everyone.
I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted, True Crime, Domestic Violence. We investigate cases of family violence each season using academic research to help us interpret the events so that we can become better advocates. In season one, we follow the case of little Melissa Gibson, who was murdered by her stepfather as her mother stood by without intervening. We learn that Melissa was not the only one being abused and took a hard look at laws and policies regarding abuse. In season two, we're telling the story of Tracy Thurman, who sued her city because police refused to protect her from her abusive husband. We'll also study the case of Joshua Osborne. His case was sensational, replete with a biker gang who rallied to protect Joshua, and new legislation resulting from his case. Josh passed away a few years ago, and two of his siblings agreed to tell his story. Except they've revealed it wasn't just Josh's story. It's their story, too. One that has been suppressed for over a decade. You can find Targeted Podcast, True Crime, Domestic Violence, on iTunes, Spotify, and all the major podcatchers. Peace, my friends. Peace.
The Salty Canadian True Crime Podcast, a Canadian true crime podcast. I will be covering cases of the local area, both solved and unsolved to date. Have you ever wondered how many unsolved crimes are local? Also, I will be covering crimes from around the world, diving into famous cases such as the Black Donnellys to current Bruce MacArthur. What makes a good criminal? What do they all have in common? Are there telltale signs? Well, subscribe and find out. Hope to see you there.